Welcome back, everybody. It's been a while since we talked some basketball, but Lane Violation is back, and let's get into it. I'm here joined by my beautiful, wonderful, immaculate, impeccable co-host, Greg Mello, and the infamous Louis Ricard.
Oh, okay.
Put in a good way.
That's fair.
And let me remind you of the mission statement of Lane Violation. We're here to talk everything NBA basketball, the ins and the outs, the ups and the downs, the quirks, the fair and foul, and how bad the Lakers suck.
Did you get hired by NPR of a break? Like, why is your voice so soft?
I don't know. I'm just feeling kind of mellow today. You know, okay. The clouds are over the city. Haven't seen the sun in a couple of days.
You're scaring me.
You know, I've been listening to a lot of, I've been watching a lot of SB Nation and John Bois, however you want to say his name. I like some good stuff. Some good stuff, and it's just a mellow. Can we get like a Careless Whisper in the background, a little bit of saxophone screeching?
When you, okay, sure. Yeah. I'll add that.
I refuse to.
But let's get back. Let's get on the tab. Let's do some bookkeeping and tab some developments in the league of late. Not much really start. Not much happens towards the end of the year. Things are starting to set. The races are going to be tied in different places. But let's shout out my boy, Greg's boy, and we know Louis' boy.
Come on now.
Dirk Nowitzki, passing Wilt for sixth all-time on the all-time scoring list. How you feel about that, Louis?
It's crazy. I mean, I just wrote a piece. Yeah, I'm going to plug my own piece, by the way. I just wrote an article about how European basketball is reshaping the NBA landscape now. And I talked to Dirk for a little bit, and he was saying how, you know, it's all about fundamentals for Europeans. And then I talked to his director of player personnel, Mr. Tony Ronzoni, who's really nice, really candid. And he said, you know, Nowitzki really started everything for European foreign players in a way, because his way of playing was so different than other players. You know, back in, you know, the Shaq days, everyone was kind of a 4 and 5. We're just posting up, two dribbles, back to the bucket. But now Nowitzki comes up, you know, faces the bucket and just drains threes in your face and just fades away like he can, like only he can. And it's just a huge achievement. He's the only European in within the top 10. And, you know, I don't think he'll climb any more up, but it's still like such a great achievement and nothing but greatness from Dirk Nowitzki over the years.
For sure. Greg, would you say that he's the best, not just European player of all time, but non-American player? I mean, you got Hakeem and a couple other people.
Yao Ming.
But as far as where he falls, as far as scoring-wise and what he's done over his career, I think sometimes people forget how good Dirk was just because how decrepit and slow he looks now.
Look at the videos of him and Nash when they were playing. My God.
I think the biggest trait you can look at to make the case for him is probably the longevity of his career. Being in the league 20-plus years, and until this, probably the last two seasons, extremely consistent. Yeah. You could always count on him for at least 16-plus points. In his prime, he was probably a 25-plus points per game guy. Always smart, high IQ dude. I think the pairing with Rick Carlisle obviously worked. They got a ring together, you know, with Jason Kidd and some of those other guys. I think that he loves the city of Dallas. He is their dude. And he's just an overall nice guy. Yeah. He seems like the guy who will always take the time to talk with you. I know Steve Nash was very similar. Loved to talk the game of basketball. So I think this is, you know, great for him. I'm glad to, even though we still don't know if he's going to retire, everyone seems to be pushing him out the door. You know, let's see if he comes back, maybe moves up a little bit further up on the scoring list. But I think that this is great for him, especially, you know, Mavericks aren't making the playoffs this season, but it's nice to have to be able to hang your hat on stuff like this.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree. I mean, it's good to see. I think he's going to come back. Like, he hasn't said anything about...
He said it's all about if he still has fun at the end of the season.
And
if his body is capable of carrying
him. I think he enjoys being with those young guys. I think it gives him some youthfulness. And I think what you'll see is you'll start to see him transition. Well, he's already in the role of basically a player coach. So where he's going to be grooming stuff. And I would like to think he would like to spend one full year with Porzingis. You know what I'm saying?
like kind of mentor him through a year and then maybe calling it quits after next year. Would you guys agree on that? Or
I mean, yeah, I mean you could see that with Tim Duncan, you know, who stuck around for a while to try to help Aldridge, you know, blossom a little bit. Different scenario, obviously, but Tim was on the, you know, on the back end of his career, and he wasn't really performing as well as we were used to, but he still played, and he still showed up every day on time and everything. So I could see Dirk coming back just to help and mentor those guys. We'll just have to see what happens, though, because obviously, like, it's 82 games in a season, so I don't know if Nowitzki can actually take care of that. But, you know, he might be on a very, very limited role for the Mavericks, just playing, you know, 10 minutes here and there and then taking a week off because he needs to. So, but it'll be, I mean, for the fans of the game, you know, people don't care if you're performing the way you used to. It's just seeing Dirk, you know, it's the same way we saw Kobe, you know, for his last season. He wasn't performing as great, yeah, you know, as well as he did. But just for the fans, you know, they it's just such a good thing for the NBA to have someone just doing that for other people. You know, I don't think the athletes do that for themselves to, like, say, I played 22 years and I was so good. It's more like, I want to thank every single one of you guys by doing this last round in this last season, because, you know, I owe my career to most of, you know, the fans here, because they made those players as famous as, you know, they got.
For sure, for sure.
As long as Dirk is having fun, and as long as he's getting more than the vet minimum, because he's owed that over his career.
He's owed a lot.
Okay. I will be all in on Dirk Nowitzki 3-point contest participant every year.
Until every he's single 50. Year.
He is a treasure. I know he's balling out to run between those racks. Not transition defense. Don't worry about that. What's important is that 3-point contest.
Why can't we just put him on one rack?
Let's go.
They just
keep throwing the balls.
Can we have a layup contest with Dirk and Vince Carter at the end of their career? Like in 10 years from now? Because Vince can still dunk.
Oh, Vince is going to dunk.
He's probably still dunking.
Yeah, he's going to be there. Yeah.
But anyways, let's move on to some other news here. D'Angelo Russell, your former Laker, just scored 27 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, 44.
To tally up his career high 44 points to beat the Kings. And not a really crucial matchup for either team, like, but
it was a big win for the Nets. They've been reeling as of late.
One of the biggest comebacks, if not the biggest, in NBA history. It was up there though. What do you guys make of that? I mean, he's 23 years young. Everyone kind of like wrote him off. Rachel Nichols like had a really good point saying like people are too worried about making hot take, you know, early on for young players and tend to write people off. And I think Russell is just proving everyone wrong at this point, especially Magic Johnson and the Lakers front office. What do you guys make of that?
Greg, do you want to go or you want to go?
I know you got a good take, Dre, so I'll go first here.
Oh, my take wasn't good?
I think that... No, you were just setting up the question. I think that it's tough because D'Angelo Russell, everyone knew he was coming out. When he came out, it was sort of an unexpected one-and-done season for him. He had a really good year at Ohio State. And I'm sure there were some people that believed, like, yes, he has NBA talent, but he wasn't supposed to be a top three pick out of the beginning of the year. No one expected that. And I think the biggest thing for him coming out, everyone looked at was, like, his vision, his passing. I mean, he did have the off-the-bounce pull-up jumper that looked really nice. Very smooth and very crafty guy coming out, but I think it was the vision. So, you know, those first couple of years in L.A. where he struggled, and again, I think a mixture of that was the way he carried himself at the time. He was a little bit more, I think a little less humble than you would have liked.
He was young.
Young guy. Yeah, no, absolutely. But also the environment at the time, you know, the Lakers, Byron Scott, very disorganized franchise with ownership and the GM with Kupchak.
The bus drama.
So there was a lot going on. I think that this is really a case of a change of scenery does wonders for a young player, especially with the fact that going to Brooklyn, he could sort of slowly become a leader among a crew of young voices anyway. We still have LeVert there. You know, Joe Harris isn't young like him, but still a young guy. Kirk's rookie.
Dinwiddie.
This team is a nice little mixture of good chemistry, I think, especially with Kenny Atkinson at the helm. So I think this is a very good story. Russell's had a great year, you know, all-star appearance. And I think that he's definitely in the conversation for most improved player of the year. So it'll be fun to watch down the stretch. I hope that they continue to do well. Brooklyn looks like they'll be making the playoffs for the first time in a little bit. So good to see for them, Dre.
Yeah, so I know when he came out, people, like you said, people were high on the fact that he could see the floor and do things this of that nature, and that he had this smooth stroke. He had the potential to shoot at a high volume from deep. And because of that, you know, this is Tinseltown. Expectations are high when you start and until you end. Like, that's like, there's no space for mediocrity, even though they haven't been good. That doesn't mean they're okay with the mediocrity. They've been trying to do things as much as they possibly could to get back to the top. But like you said, just the change of hand of ownership, the stuff that's going on in the Buss family and Jeannie removing her brother, like all these moving parts have kind of put a little damper mood over all that. I do think Magic Johnson was a little premature to move him. But at that level, and at pretty much at any level, what was going on in the locker room plays just as much of a part as what's going on the floor, point blank period. Okay? But a 19-year-old, he's 19. He's still a teenager, all right. And this is some of the people. It's a lot of people's problem with the allowing of changing the age back to 18, just because they're young. But the thing is, and I think I've also come to recognize that even in myself as a man, as I get older, a lot of your weaknesses, if you do buy into maturing, start to become your strengths. You want to talk about kind of a confidence that was borderline arrogance for D'Angelo, has blossomed into this ability to. Close to heighten his game at the highest points in the game, the clutch time, and it's also led to some of his efficiency numbers to jack up there in Brooklyn. And sometimes a change of scenery is just necessary for a career, for a player's development. Like, there's so many cases where guys could be so much better in different places, or guys would not be as good if they were in different places. So much of this life, especially as an athlete, is just. There's so many variables that can get in the way of your Absolutely. Development or how good you are, right? What people expected out of D'Angelo Russell is what he's doing right now. You expected a guy that can get about 20, 21 and give you about 7 assists a game. That's what he's doing right now. You expected a guy to take leaps and bounds shooting from, a nice mid-range pull-up area out to about 30 feet, and he's doing that. I mean, he's averaging a career high in points. He's averaging a career high in assists. But that's not what I look at. I actually look at the effective field goal percentage and his increases from 3-point range and just from the floor. He's gone. I mean, last year, this first full season in Brooklyn, he was shooting about 41% from the floor. That's gone up to 43. Even a 2% gain is still solid. Like, you just want to see those numbers continue to go up. Effective field goal percentage went from 48 to 50 now. If you're shooting an effective field goal percentage at a 50% clip, that means not only are you taking good shots, but they're efficient and like very valuable shots. That means like you're more efficient than a guy who's going to shoot in the mid-range constantly because you're going back and forth between the mid-range and knocking down at a high clip from three. I'm making sense, right? Everything I'm saying is coming out right? And so I think at the beginning of the year, I was really pushing for Siakam. But the more and more I've watched Russell, it's like he's kind of like trying to turn it on. At least I'm going to win the joint. He's like really, he's really pushing this team. And this team is going back and forth between trying to stay over 500. And it's like as soon as you think they're going to drop, Russell kind of does something to make sure they're okay. And I think it's been really impressive, especially with the fact that LeVert was down for a long time, doing what he was out for a little bit. But I've liked what he's done. And I think my biggest argument against Siakam at this point, even though I still think Siakam could and should win it, is the fact that I still think the Raptors would be a top three, top two team even without him. But I think the Nets would be picking in the top 10 without Russell's production. That's just my view personally. But yeah.
So, small aside for Siakam. Because I love Siakam, and I know you do too.
If you actually do look at
the numbers, he's probably the most impactful Raptor on the team this season.
Yeah, for sure.
But
at the same time, I think if you removed him from that equation, I think they would still do arguably just good because that roster isn't
isn't miles different from
I think it would depend if Lowry and Leonard are still taking nights off like they have. I think they're probably
I think
having Siakam allows him the ability to rest often, but he still is super impactful.
But even with the developing Siakam, those last couple years, they finished third and first. And he was still playing solid minutes. Like, he was playing like 15.
He went from like a fringe roster player to a role player. But he's gotten better every year.
He's increased his role, which of course shows you why the numbers have gone up, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's still like, even with a top five player in the league and Lowry and a solid roster, I still think they do just about the same as they would.
They play differently, he'd still be good. But like, I think it'd be like a DeMar and Kyle like all over again with the Raptors. They wouldn't struggle without Siakam. Like, he's seen as a needed piece.
Yeah, he's made them
but
more
if
dangerous,
he if he never played with them, we would not see the difference, because they would play differently and they would play accordingly to what they have. Kyle and Kawhi would not take nights off because they knew they would have to be better. And I guarantee you that they would be in the same spot that they are right now. It is so nice to have Siakam, not for the regular season, but to me it's incredibly nice to have him in the playoffs. That's when it's really going to matter, and that's when we'll see if he can show up. Same thing with D'Angelo Russell. I think that to really be as great of a story as we want it to be, D'Angelo Russell needs to go off in those playoffs, because that will show that he's there now.
And that plays into the award, you know, because they don't do the awards until after.
Well, I don't think it does. I don't think it does, though.
Well, it completes a narrative, but they're technically only supposed to look at the regular
season.
But it
plays into, especially if you look at how they vote for the MVP sometimes. Like, the narrative continues, because
the narrative is there,
I remember when Westbrook went out that year, he was having trouble double, and Harden went forward. They were talking about that possibly playing in. Now, ultimately, it didn't, but it does ultimately start the play on writers and voters' minds.
I think for a lot of people. Just one last thing before we move on. Just, I think, to bring it back to the Lakers, if you look at the actual trade that happened, they traded away Timothy Mozgov,
MVP,
and D'Angelo Russell to the Nets for Brooke Lopez and the 27th pick, and that 27th pick was Kyle Kuzma. So really,
it worked out for both.
I don't think that they were as hurt. I think the biggest loss for them was that they were stupid and they didn't re-sign Brooke Lopez this offseason.
Yeah.
But if you look at it just on the merit of the trade package, it was fair for both
sides. I don't think Russell does what he's doing now.
Who knows what he would have done with the Lakers.
I don't think. Yeah.
Let's move on to another team, not the Lakers, but another team in the West who's actually doing really well and who got another record for the umpteenth year in a row. The Spurs. Greg Popovich's Spurs. They've had another winning season, and that tallies them to a 22nd consecutive winning season, pretty much since Pop took over from GM to coach. They've had a losing record for 65 days since 97.
No other team is close either.
I'm going to repeat that one more time. They've had a losing record for 65 days, which is about 2 months and a half, not even. So they've lost for 2 months and a half in the last 20 years? 20 years, guys. What do we make of that? I mean, obviously it's the coach. Like, Popovich is just an incredible coach, and he will go down as the best coach in history, in my opinion. But how do they do this with, like, a bunch of kind of random pieces? Like, Derek White, no one expected him to be that good this year. You look at all the foreign players they brought in. I mean, Ginobili and Parker were not really big names when they came in the league.
The thing I love about the Spurs is, and I'm going to get over to Greg because I talked enough last segment.
Yeah, seriously.
The thing I love about the Spurs is the fact that every player for them is a project player. Not in the sense that every player isn't good or isn't developed, but they're constantly working on a guy.
Kawhi Leonard?
And getting them to fit that system. So the coaching is upper echelon elite. I don't really expect them to have losing seasons.
By the way, the closest team, and then I'll toss it to Greg, the closest team to the Spurs in that losing record for, you know, for a season is the Houston Rockets at 1,007 days. That's the closest team to the Spurs in terms of losing record for a certain amount of time. 65 for the Spurs, 1,007 for the second place. Greg, your thoughts?
Greg Popovich is the best coach in NBA history. And I think that he has the cachet to prove it, and he shows it year in and year out when you have this, like Dre said, collection of talent that might not be expected to do a lot right out of the gate, and he somehow scrounges, you know, a top six seed. I had the Spurs going into this year just missing the playoffs. I thought that once
did, right?
I think once DeJounte Murray was out, I was like, this is going to be tough. And I still like Derek White. I still like DeMar DeRozan to an extent. I'm not as high as some people are, but he's still a good player. I love LaMarcus Aldridge. But I was like, there's too much in the Western Conference for them to be in the playoffs, let alone the fifth seed where they are right now. And they have gone much further than I expected. I mean, there's still games to play, and we're going to talk a little bit about the race kind of in the bottom half of the West. But, you know, they have guys like Marco Bellinelli and Patty Mills and Rudy Gay on some nights still, like, putting up some numbers. And it's really the guys, the young guys that you want to see that are pushing forward, like a Derek White. When DeJounte Murray gets back,
that's going to be a very interesting thing for the Spurs to do with DeJounte Murray and Derek White. We don't know what's going to happen because both are really good point guards.
I think they'll be fine as a backcourt.
But they might. No, what I'm saying is that there are rumors that they might trade one of them away.
Well, they're going to favor Murray over White because they're so high on him. Now, you got to see what he's going to do off the ACL, but they were so high.
But I don't think they expected Derek White to be that good, though.
Well, Derek White had flashes last year. Like, he's always flashed the ability to pour it up. Like, that's just...
We'll have, obviously, way too.
But I don't see him as a better everyday starting guard than DeJounte Murray.
I like DeJounte Murray. He's incredible in defense, too, so... So that wraps it up for the bookkeeping, right?
Yeah. Let's go some playoff talk here. Let's start off. The Western Conference is going to be the first two topics here, but let's first start at the top.
Yep.
Dre Louis, we know we have that bet going on with our boy Fernando and our other boy Akil.
Akil is about to eat a hat.
Fernando.
With
I don't bet anybody, but except on myself.
Half a game behind, man. Denver Nuggets.
Hey, they better look, man. Warriors better stop pussyfooting, because that's a legitimate word too. Look that joint up.
I won't do that.
Like yeah, dragging no, your feet. Yeah. That's a legitimate nothing, word.
Well, yeah. Let's contextualize it before you go. Golden State and Denver are respectively 1 and 2 in the West right now. Denver is trailing them by a game and about a half a game, and they could be some rumbling and tumbling here.
Yeah. For sure.
And I believe they still have a game against each other down the stretch.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's April 9th. April 9th,
something
I believe.
Like
something like that.
I'll tell you.
But that game is going to be huge. And who, I'm telling you, Denver needs to do everything they possibly can to get a one seed. Because the fact of the matter is the team is 17-6 on the road versus a 30-6 home record, right? You don't want to get to a point where you're not playing well on the road, especially in the playoffs. Especially if you get to the conference finals and you're playing a Golden State and you have to go to Oracle. So you want to keep that game a mile high. So they're half a game back. They need to do everything in their power to get that one seed.
Yeah, I mean, they have the Warriors' schedule isn't too bad down the stretch.
They play each other on the 2nd of April.
Yes, they play they play the Nuggets on the 2nd. They've got some scrappy teams coming up, though. They have the Pacers tonight. And I know that that's a game on paper that you're like, the Warriors smoke them. But the Pacers have battled every game
they're
that they've
grinding out
down
team.
The stretch. The Pistons have looked good as of late.
Yes, they have.
The Grizzlies have shown random games where they're just ready to take out good teams.
Yeah, for some reason. They play the Thunder, too.
Yeah.
Nuggets play the Thunder.
So I think that – and they play the Clippers also. The Warriors are going to have less because I think the Nuggets schedule is a little bit tougher. So the Warriors can afford to have, like, lesser games down the stretch. But I think that just having the Nuggets there to push them for that one seed – up till the end of the season is going to be huge for them, just because the Warriors aren't going to be able to rest as much as they would like to down the street.
I think it matters more for Denver to clinch that number one seed than Golden State.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. And so I don't think Golden State has anything in mind right now. I think they're just like, they've already clinched their playoff spot. We know they're going to end up either at 1 or 2. I think Denver is really the one that's trying to get it because they play really well at home. And
30-6. They're like, average on the road.
Yeah. And so it really matters for Denver right now. I mean, Denver will still play at home for their first round. But then in the later rounds, if they want to have a chance to beat Golden State, which it's very thin, obviously, right now, but home is where they're going to do it. because they've shown up every single night on the court in the Mile High City. And Malone is more comfortable having his guys playing at home than on the road. We've seen that before. Golden State really doesn't care because they're still going to show up no matter what. I'm just very intrigued to see really if Denver is actually going to push for it, or since they've already clinched the playoffs, are they going to kind of let go and like ease up a little bit, save some players to keep going, you know? Because, I mean, they've pretty much clinched the third seed at least, even if they have a losing record from now. So it'll be interesting to see, though.
They're not gonna lose games down the stretch. So
I don't think so either.
I also me think looking at the Warriors schedule, of course you're gonna favor them in every single one of those matchups.
Right? Yeah,
but it just depends on which one of those games they're actually gonna play at their highest cap. Because for them, you're gonna see everything on the line in the postseason. They're gonna play at their
warm up at the end of the season
too.
This isn't a new story.
Golden State. Coast and just is just Golden State until the postseason, and they click it on flip a switch. And I know people like to say, "Oh, well, not every player or every team can flip a switch." We've seen this team do it multiple times. The only difference now they have DeMarcus Cousins.
Like, we can also flip a switch.
And okay, yes, Cousins is an issue sometimes when you're playing a more athletic, a big that can stretch out. But okay, whatever. Like yes, and yes, they have to fix some defensive things. Like they have to gel better on defense. But I'm not afraid of what I'm not. Nothing. No one scares me to threaten them right now. You know, that's just my personal feel. You can
contest
it, but like no one, like they are the best team in the league.
They're like the Patriots. To me, they're like the Patriots. I mean, they will literally do whatever they have to do to clinch a playoff spot, no matter like, and they'll coast through that most likely, and then a warm up at the end of the season with a couple of games where you really see them coming in, and then they show up first round, and that's when they start like going hard. Like, just to, like, show that they're here. And I think DeMarcus Cousins, who hasn't made the playoffs in a hot minute. Individually, I don't think he's ever made the playoffs.
Has he played in the postseason?
No.
I don't think so.
I don't think he's ever made the postseason. And I definitely, I'm telling you right now, he's only here for a year. He's gone after this year. He's going to go hard.
I think he's willing to do whatever it seems for him to get that.
But he's going
to
go hard. And he's not going to let anybody tell him that he can't get a championship. So he's going to help this team, and you're going to have to see. However, the Nuggets are a really good team.
Greg, do you have any concerns as far as the Warriors down the stretch and into the playoffs?
No, I don't think I have any concerns for them. I think that I will say that April 2nd game against the Nuggets is at home for the Warriors. So I think that's the chance for both teams to make a statement game. I think that's the game where the Warriors say, listen, little brother, you've got nothing on us. Whereas the Nuggets can be like, if we can beat them at Oracle, even if we're not getting the one seed, this proves that we are for real and we're tuned up, ready to make this.
By the way, guys, Denver, what are we thinking of them in the postseason? First playoff spot clinched since 2013. Never won an NBA championship, even though they had good pieces around him. Mike Malone up for coach of the year. Jokic was in the MVP discussion. Can they make a run?
I got them at least the West Conference semis. I love their roster. I love how deep they go.
They never went to the conference finals either, by the way.
I know the depth of teams gets cut during postseason time, but I love how they have extra bodies. Like, let's say Murray's having an off night. You got Monte Morris can come in there and ball. If Gary Heller has an off night, we've seen Malik Beasley be able to explode.
Like, Isaiah Thomas is also healthy now.
And Isaiah Thomas is healthy. And a healthy Isaiah Thomas will give you buckets. Let's not sit here and act
especially
like
in the playoffs.
Give you buckets. So we know he has that clutch gene in him. And their ability to run, their ability to be versatile, they have solid defenders like Torrey Craig. I mean, they can. I personally feel like they can match up with just about anybody.
But they
have to win on the road. So
hypothetically, right now the playoffs picture has them second seed playing against the Clippers first. If they win that game, they would play against the winner of Houston against the Spurs. And if they win that game, they would play against most likely the Warriors. What's that like?
I think that if they're playing the Clippers, they'll be fine. They'll win that series. I think the Nuggets absolutely do not want to play the Rockets. That's the one matchup I think across the conference. I mean, they have to play the Warriors at some point if they make it that far, but the Rockets they want to avoid, so they'd be hoping that the Spurs can take them out. And I think that correct me if I'm wrong. I think that the Thunder play the Nuggets all right too.
Yes.
And right now, they're
the Thunder have swept.
Thunder, yeah. Okay. Thunder is eighth seed right now.
Yeah, they're the eighth seed. Again. They're the eighth seed due to a bunch of tiebreakers. So I think the Nuggets would rather not see the Thunder as well. And can we talk real quick? There's a scenario where we're gonna have Warriors Thunder in the first round of the Western Conference playoffs.
So excited. You know, that's gonna be the best first round game in a long time in the NBA. But speaking of that, because that's a hypothetical, right? Let's look at the 6th, 7th, and 8th seed, and from fifth to eighth seed in the West.
I'm sorry. Denver has beat OKC every single time.
Okay, so Denver hasn't. Yeah, so it was the Rockets was the that I was thinking around, of. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so Denver to go back real quick. Yeah. I think they'll be fine with anyone but Houston, really.
So let's look from fifth to eighth seed real quick. We have Utah, Spurs, Clippers, and Oklahoma City from 5 to 8, ranked respectively. They're all within a game and a half. No. Yeah,
a half game.
Half game of one another. How crucial is it to not be that eighth seed? To not play the Warriors? Like, do you think it's better for teams to play the Warriors first round? Because, you know, like, if you win, then you're pretty much good to go.
I mean, it matters for specific teams. Because the Thunder, they don't want to be the eighth seed because this is a team that can actually go deep if they have their pieces together clicking.
Yeah.
The Clippers, they're not going to go deep point blank, period. Like, they're a good team, but they're not this year. The Spurs, I don't think they go deep. Despite Pop's good coaching, like, I don't think they go deep. The Jazz will be interesting in the postseason.
If they get the right teams against them.
Yeah, like, but I think it really matters the most for the Thunder. I know it's a tiebreaker situation, but they're 4-6 in their last 10. They have not played well. When you got teams like the Clippers and the Spurs, who have been a combined 17-3 over their last 20. Yep. So it's the Thunder. They don't want to fall there. They need to pick it up. They had a tight game last night, almost came back and beat the Raptors, but they gotta find some wins.
If we look at it, Spurs do not want to be the eighth seed. Actually, no matter who you are, you really don't want to be the eighth seed. But like the Spurs have been really horrible at away. And to start at Oracle Arena would not be good. Not that like it no matter what, they're gonna be away. But I'm saying, like, if you're going to play away, you might as well play in, like, a mild city. Like the Jazz is not, like, it's a good atmosphere, but it's not Oracle Arena in the playoffs. You know what I mean? So, out of all these teams, the Spurs have the worst record away. I don't know if that affects anything, but I don't think the Spurs want to play the Warriors, especially since they really haven't had a favorable matchup against that team in a while.
I think that the Clippers don't care. They're just happy to be here. I think the Spurs probably don't care. They'd rather not be the eighth seed, but I don't think they care if they do. I mean, you just saw the other night they beat the Warriors during their win streak. Yeah. I mean, that was at home, but granted, like, the Spurs, if the Warriors know that they can't take off if they're playing the Spurs. That's the thing. And I think the Jazz don't want to see the Warriors at all because Rudy Gobert gets run off the floor if he ever plays the Warriors. But that's when you have to talk about Boogie Cousins now in the equation. How long do the Warriors play Boogie Cousins in playoff series? Because against certain teams,
is he there?
You're able to leave him in, but against other teams athletically like the Thunder and such, how much is he really going to play? I think that's an interesting question. I think you just dug it out. I think it's an interesting question.
Cousins will want to, and that's all going to be like Steve Kerr's decision because Steve Kerr is a really players coach, and I think that might be one of those things where Steve Kerr needs to sit DeMarcus down and be like, "Listen, if you want to win, you're going to have to do it our way."
Well, because I think you dug it out because on paper that is the better. I know matchups matter, but I don't think it gets them to a point where they're so in trouble that they're going to necessarily lose a game because he's out there.
No.
It could hurt them.
I think there could be times where there's enough of a stretch of a game where they leave DeMarcus Cousins there and the momentum swings and the other team is running and then Steve Kerr needs to go, I need to yank him.
And maybe
that's the thing.
And maybe I'm just investing too much on their talent and too much on the fact that this is a team that can heat up at any point in the game and put a run on you and now you're down by 20. Or like, oh, they're down by 15. okay, now they're up by six. Like, you know, they hit those scary stretches. So maybe I'm putting too much on that, but I don't know.
Well, I don't know how much Warriors you've watched this year, but like there are points in the game, and we're gonna have to move on to the next segment soon. But like there are points in the game where DeMarcus Cousins is out there, and he's just not doing what the system is calling for him. Yep. You know, taking a screen and then just making a hard cut because Curry is dragging defenders away and looking for the quick pass to him. Like he's sticking to one spot, or he's like hovering out in the 3-point range, or he's trying to bang really hard for too much of the shot clock. And then on defense has never been a strong suit. Certain guys are going to run him off the court. And like those things are things you can deal with in the regular season because the Warriors have the best lineup in the league. But in the playoffs in a 7-game series, it does become matchup dependent. It does become who wins a stretch of 4 minutes in a game. And if you can rack up those 4-minute sequences in a game in the playoffs, you're going to end up winning that game. And I think that that's the important thing to look at for DeMarcus Cousins. I know that he's never been in the playoffs before. He is an elite center in this league still, I think. It'll be interesting to see what he gets this offseason, but this is the time with the playoffs coming up, this is the time where he has to prove that he is going to be worth whatever money he thinks is, and he needs to step up and really listen to what Kerr is saying.
And speaking of DeMarcus Cousins, let's talk about Celtics against Philadelphia.
Great segue, bro.
Yep. Excellent.
So Greg, you'll touch on it a little more than us, but Celtics versus Philly yesterday, came down to the wire. Jimmy Butler wins it. I mean, puts the dagger with a late jumper. Did that indicate anything to you that about the playoff the potential playoff matchup against these two teams? Like, Embiid has been struggling against the Celtics, comes up with 37 points, 22 boards, says that he's the most unstoppable player in the league. Love the confidence. What does it say about what could happen in the postseason?
Dre, you can go first here.
I didn't get to watch the game. I will admit that I didn't get a chance to watch the game. I wasn't home.
No worries.
But we're talking about what does it say for them moving forward?
Yeah. Obviously, it's a good win.
I think it's good for Philly to get over the hump against Boston.
Yeah.
But the thing that I thought was so crazy about it all was kind of some of the Celtics' reactions, like especially like Terry Rozier after, where they were just like, okay, well, y'all beat us once, cool. And it's just like
the Warriors mentality type of deal?
Well, it's in the sense that we know we have your number, so
we're not worried about it.
So we're not worried about it, which is kind of weird, but at the same time, you don't want to sit there and get complacent because this is a different Sixers team. If they have it to a point where all those pieces are clicking at one time, and I think this morning, I think Stephen A. Smith actually put it in a good way of form. If they're able to have Ben orchestrating and B dominate guys down low, Tobias shooting from the range and Tobias and basically Redick shooting good from range and where they're stretching and they can threaten you in different parts of the floor.
Setting up the field, yeah.
And though Jimmy may get lost and become the fifth option, if they allow him to close,
what he's here for.
He's cool with that. He's cool with that. So now you have a formula that this is a team that's still trying to work out the kinks because there's a lot of new pieces. So chemistry has to mesh, guys have to mesh. And I think they can become dangerous for Boston because I also think they improved on their depth at the deadline.
So let me put it this way. The team, Boston, right? Boston, who was one of the heavy favorites to win the East this season, kind of went through roller coasters throughout the season. Plays a Philly team that's finally, you know, that looks a little better, though there were a couple of moments, you know, throughout the game that you were wondering what was happening. The fact that Andre mentioned, you know, how Boston was not worried one bit. Does that say anything about what could happen? Like, do they still think they could dominate Philly in 4 or 5 games?
I don't know if they think they can dominate them in 4 or 5, but I think that Boston still believes that they can handle Philly. And that's just because of, I know Dre says that the Philly depth has changed. And in some ways it has since the trade deadline. But in other ways, it really hasn't. Like, I love Boban, but Boban is not a guy that you can play against Celtics as a backup center. He just cannot. Al Horford will space him out. Boban has no lateral quickness at all to stay in front of a guy.
That'd just be scary.
Aaron Baines is just going to just hammer him just
Aaron
down
Baines
low.
Is one of the most underrated centers.
So Boban, you don't know. Amir Johnson is on his last legs as a backup center. There's no way he's doing the same thing. Jonah Bolden, the concept of Jonah Bolden is a lot better than the actual realistic plastic of Jonah Bolden.
He plays good sometimes.
He plays good sometimes, but he fouls like way too quickly to stay in a playoff series. And then like the wing guys you have right now, playable wings, you have Mike Scott, good. James Ennis.
He can be.
He can be okay.
They have guys that can be.
The other night against the Hornets, he scored like 16 off the bench or something like that. He was like all of the bench points for the game, and that's a problem though. That's a problem.
But see, like, I don't understand why the bench hasn't been able to get it. Like they have guys that have been viable bench options in the past. Like they even have Simmons off the bench.
I think
who
it's
could
just
be solid. Like,
I just
just
don't playing
get it.
It's literally just playing the Celtics. And you know what else happens when the Sixers play the Celtics?
Terry Rozier
goes off. Suddenly he's
Superman,
5 for 5, 4 of 4 from deep in the first half, and you're like, why is this Terry Rozier here
right now?
Because
he can. Because Scary Terry is always here.
He sucks 95% of the year.
And you know what? I'm okay with him balling out for 5%.
Yeah. But realistically, honestly, I think that it was, like Dre said, huge for the Sixers to get this win, especially with their new starting five.
Yeah.
Because the only loss – let me give you some numbers here. In the 8 games that Simmons, Redick, Butler, Harris have started and Embiid, they're 7-1, 17.7 net rating, 119 offensive rating.
That's great.
And a 101 defensive rating. And their only loss was against the Celtics earlier.
When they just
very,
got back, right?
Very, yes, very close, like, single possession game
loss.
That
game was great, too.
Okay, that was another great game,
right?
Game. Yeah.
That was wasn't there a horrible turnover or something?
Yeah, there was something down the line. So, like, the Sixers have picked up good wins lately with that starting lineup.
They have played really well.
They beat the Pacers when they were still the third seed then. They beat the Bucks the other night, and now they beat the Celtics. These are all crucial. They beat the Kings as well, who, you know, not as in the same vein, but still fighting for the playoffs type of thing. Not anymore, but at the time. They are getting good wins down the stretch, and now the rest of the way down the schedule, their last 10 games, they only have two playoff teams on their docket. The Nets, who look good and have played the Sixers
well,
and
they will have to win.
The
Nets have to win.
And the Bucks. The Sixers are in play if they play up to their potential to go on a 16-game winning streak to close out the year. They have 10 more. They are on a 6-game win streak right now, which is the active longest right now in the league. I think that that's not going to happen. I think Brett Brown has noted that he is going to continue tinkering to see what he has with a Boban. Like, can he play? How many
minutes? Those bench players
realistically,
going,
yeah, he's really looking at the bench. How big of a liability is TJ going to be at certain times? We really need to get rid of the TJ McConnell, Ben Simmons minutes. Like, just please, I don't want those two playing at the same time ever. They should never play at the same time.
It's like the worst combo ever.
But this is. Now that that big game has happened, I think that you can't I don't think you can overrate how big of a mental jam that was for the Sixers, especially for Joel Embiid.
That's my biggest thing.
To be owned by Al Horford and to an extent Aaron Baines all of these matchups prior, and then to come out after a rested game against the Charlotte Hornets, he was like, I'm going to play against the Celtics. And come out and dominate for 4 quarters. And he was a monster at the free throw line. I think he was like 20 of 21 from the free throw line.
And that defensive possession at the end when he loses him and then out of nowhere just comes back,
swats it. Second jump, offhand block.
No, that was unreal.
And then again comes back to contest.
The league or something.
Comes back to contest.
That's another point.
The rebound from Marcus Morris. And I think... it's really crazy to say it, but Joel Embiid is the best defender they have on Kyrie Irving in a playoff season.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons sometimes can do it, but Kyrie's just too shifty for him. And I think that says a lot about their depth and their rotations. Like, there's just so much fluctuation experimentation that needs to happen. I think we don't want to overrate one game. I think the Celtics are fine to say, like, yeah, whatever. Like, we play you well. And in a 7-game series, I think that home court is important. I think the Sixers.
That's going to determine everything.
Is going to be huge, but I do think the Celtics feel less.
Also, not at all.
The other thing about this, and we can move forward, is the sense that I think the Celtics know that they're not going to be on the same side as them in the playoffs anyway. So like they're 1 game behind the Pacers. They're going to be in the 5-4 whole slot regardless, because I think they're 4 games behind Philly. They're not going to make that up. So they're not going to see them until they could possibly see them in the conference finals. Right.
Yeah, no, they
wouldn't. Am I doing the seeding right?
Yeah. No, they would have. They would have. So Boston, as of right now, is a fifth seed. Would play the Pacers first,
yeah,
and then play the winner of Milwaukee against Miami, and then
they would have
play
to the
and
yeah,
then play whoever wins in the
yeah. So the like, they're that's for them. It's just like, okay, we're not gonna see y'all again. Like, or we'll see y'all in the conference finals. So, yeah.
And those are different teams. Those like. Those two teams, not just the Celtics, but those two teams will be very different in terms of intensity and in terms of clicking. Like Andre said, the chemistry is really what the biggest piece of concern for Philly, because the bench players are not consistent. Whereas, you know, we were used to kind of a better, you know, a better format for them, because they would come in, we would know who would get the buckets most likely. Now they came in with kind of a whole restructuration of the team, and some of the bench players are not fitting in as well as they should. Like the TJ.
They're still tuning up, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the biggest piece of concern. Boston is finally kind of waking up. I don't think that loss means anything to them. I think they were literally like, we're going to go in, we're still going to play them. And no matter what, like, I think it's a good thing for Terry to play as well as he did.
Well, I think they were trying to win that game.
Oh, they were definitely trying.
They came out of the gates on fire.
Oh, they were not trying to lose.
I think ultimately they understand their positioning.
Yeah.
Like, because here's the thing. That game mattered more for Philly in the sense that seeding wise.
Yes.
They don't want to be in a position where like they give the Pacers space to catch back up to a three and they have to play Boston in the first round.
Yeah.
Also, Boston understands that they can beat a Pacers team in seven in the first round. And it's a better matchup for them to play the Bucks next round than to play Toronto.
Yes.
So, especially now that Milwaukee lost Brogdon, that's a big piece, that you lose Brogdon. And you don't, like, Giannis has yet to have that time in his career where he dominates a playoff series and does that, which this is his year to do that.
This for him and D'Angelo Russell.
So I think it's a better matchup for them. They understand what's going on. But would you guys like to move forward? Or
yeah, we'll have to see what happens with it. Dre, why don't you lead us in?
Yeah, so the year's come to a close, man. We've had guys. I think this has been a really exciting year to see guys grow. Players take their next step. And so I think the All-NBA team is going to be pretty interesting. And starting with one of you guys, if you guys had to put together your All-NBA team, is that what we're doing right now?
Yeah,
right?
No, just a quick question for you. Because I forgot. The All-NBA team, is it per position, or is it just the best five players?
It's two guards, two wings, a center.
But it can be funky in the sense that they can add an extra forward position to either take away from a center or from a guard.
Well, let's do the original format, two guards, two wings,
one
center. Okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Greg, why don't you start us off? Oh.
Yeah.
Greg, why don't you start us off? Andre freaked me out a little bit. I'm going to leave now. I'll see you guys in a bit.
No. So I think that the first guard spot is pretty easy. There's go James Harden here, obviously.
Yeah.
MVP candidate.
57 last night against Memphis.
I think that the second guard spot is a little trickier.
And
right now for me, I'm looking at Damian Lillard, the season that he's been having.
Huh.
If you look at, I know that they're only the four seed right now, but they've been consistent this whole season. Yeah.
What are his stats again?
So this year he is averaging 26. Four boards and almost seven assists per game.
Okay.
Shooting 37% from deep, effective field goal percentage of 52, and he's one of the best free throw shooters in the league.
Yes.
At 91%. And he's just been dominant night in and night out. I think that the other guards you're probably looking at are Steph.
I was about to say I would go all in on Dame because of what he's doing, but if you look at Steph, he's at 28 points, and I'm just going to start with statistics, but mm-hmm. the way he changed the game is completely different. He's at 28 points a game, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He is shooting 47% from the field, 43% from the three-point line, over 91% in free throws. His player efficiency rating is 24.5.
Which is only a tenth higher than Miller, I believe.
But the way Steph is, what he's doing. Here's the problem with Steph. He's playing in such a good team, with such a good team, that his achievement are going to be dismissed no matter what you say. He could have he could average 32 or 33 points a game and shooting 50% from the free, from the 3-point line. But still, because he's with KD, because he's with Draymond, because he's with Klay, people would be like, yeah, like whatever. He's really not doing that much. He's just, you know, he's being set up with all his teammates. But if you I truly believe that Steph is one of the one generation talent. If you put him anywhere on any team, he will do the same exact thing. And for that reason, I have him as my second guard in the All-NBA team. And I love Dame, and Dave would definitely be in the second, I think. Dave would definitely be in the second.
I don't think you can go wrong with either. I don't think it's an I'm doing it all for right now just because
that's fair.
Right now, Lillard has played 11 games more than him.
Yeah.
And everything else is super close.
That's
like, fair. Steph is going to play out the rest of the season, I'm sure, and then I would put him first team. Like,
that's easy. Fair.
I think that just noting how close those two guys are, and Lillard just like
– And I mean, yeah.
He's such a good player, and he's – Similarly, I think in a way, he's like the Mike Conley of his tier of guard. Like, we always forget about Damian Lillard.
Which is crazy.
Because he's in Portland.
Which is so crazy.
That's nuts to me.
And that's about it. Like, he is basically Steph Curry if there was no Steph Curry.
They're like the same like player. Well, yeah, basically they're the same guy. Like, his range, he can shoot just deep.
Dame is so underrated like as a shooter because no one sees him shoot as well.
He doesn't get the same gravity as Steph, obviously, like running around through screens, yeah. And maybe the handle's a little bit better for Steph, obviously. But like, they are very similar players.
Yeah, this would be he's a threat, but that's the problem for me, and that's gonna be the problem for his whole career. He'll always be a second NBA All NBA guy, second team All NBA guy because of Steph Curry,
yeah.
And because of the magnitude he carries. This is a guy who at his prime made LeBron James get lost in a new cycle. So, I mean, he's a generational guy. I still think Steph goes there as much as I think Dame deserves it.
And what about Westbrook?
I think he's going to be second team probably.
Second team. Yeah. But then
average a triple double.
Well, him and Lillard are probably going to be the two guards on the second team.
Yeah, I think that you can like lock those four players into first That's and fair. Second team, and then it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
But so let's look at the
wings.
Forwards.
Yeah, Dre.
I mean, is this a year where
PG?
Where I think this is a year where LeBron falls to the second team.
Oh, he's not on the
I don't think he's on the first team.
But people still make the argument because they'll be like, it's not a – and technically, it's not a down year for him. He's averaging 27, 8, and 8.
But he played so few games, though.
Yeah, so but still, like this is a year that's going to be out of the norm for LeBron. So I have PG and I have Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
Okay, we can all agree on that?
Yeah, I think so. I think the conversation that you would have probably would be if – because I know Kawhi has had a great year, but he's also played less games. So I think LeBron I think the real first-team debate you're having now is Kevin Durant or Paul George.
Yeah,
if you look at Kevin Durant
– he's been balling. 28 points a game, too.
Crazy.
But
Paul George has, I think, the narrative behind him because of – his partnership with Russell Westbrook That's allowing true. Him to really blossom this year, two-way dominant force. I mean, Kevin Durant has played well also, like, on the defensive end. But
been crazy good.
I think it's tough because really what you're saying is, like, you have to accept Kevin Durant is a better player.
He's the best player in the world to me.
He's a better player than Paul George. But
he's at 27 points a game right now. 6 rebounds and 5
Paul
assists.
Paul George has been incredible.
And that matters.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's something to be said for a guy to get rewarded for, like, averaging a career high and things. And then I watched that whole game last night. His defense on Kawhi Leonard was so nuts, even though Kawhi had the little, bro, are you bodying me?
That was such a good shot. Yeah,
but there was this one series where, it might have been Van Vliet, he tried to feed it into Kawhi at the post.
Right.
George, like, dives, bats the ball down, dives for the ball. Like, his positioning, man, is so
he plays so forward. Hard and I'm he's very smart
because it makes me happy.
So I think last position center, and I think that this is a good conversation to have. Really, you're looking at Nikola Jokic or Joel Embiid for first team.
It's tough,
and it's tough. Both guys have strong
I
cases.
Think of someone else, but I can't.
No. For first team, I think that's
yeah,
that's
no, what yeah, that, third, that is
third,
it.
Third team, because whoever loses is going to be second team. Third team, you'll eventually probably talk Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert.
Yeah,
maybe Drummond, but that's probably what you're looking at.
I think Towns would deserve the second team nod. I mean, not the second team, but the third team nod. Even though Gobert is awesome.
Okay, so you'll make the case for Embiid, obviously.
I would actually put Jokic.
Come on, bro. You know he's
no. I was about to say let's see the pros and cons. I was about to give an argument for Jokic, and then you bounce back with Embiid. Yeah, but thanks, I guess I'll just walk away.
I think that both have been incredible this year. And
different both, ways, too, which
are,
I like.
Both are, like, outside. Like, if you want to have an MVP discussion outside the top three, like, they're, like, 5, 6, 7 with Lillard, I would also put in that category.
And Westbrook.
So I think that really Jokic has been a much more well-rounded player.
Yeah.
And in the elite moments where offense matters more, Jokic is going to be more valuable to you as a team. And he's had a career year. He's averaging like 20 plus and almost 10 assists. Not that Embiid is a slouch. He's averaging 20 plus and like... He's averaging a double-double, like, pretty much.
With over 20 points.
Jokic is almost averaging triple-double, so that's the thing. But, like, I think the real... The reality of... And I know we've been saying that the top part of the East is now definitely comparable with the West, but the Nuggets, day in and day out, they're playing in the Western Conference, which is a tougher conference. Yes. Jokic is playing with lesser players next to him. Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, they're not Ben Simmons.
They're good, Jimmy but they're Butler, not great. Yeah.
Okay, Jokic is truly the engine of his team. And Embiid is the same, but he is a different engine of his team. I think that offensively, the nights that Jokic is not doing what he does, then the Nuggets aren't doing well. If Embiid isn't doing what he does on the offensive end, it's fine as long as he picks up the slack on the defensive end. Because you still have Simmons, Butler, and Harris.
I think that's the biggest distinction to me is...
And it sucks because I feel like I'm punishing Embiid that way, but he's...
But you're not, though, because if you look at it, they play so differently while being at the same position. Jokic is a facilitator while being an offensive weapon, like, mainly, right? To me, he's like the James Harden of centers because you can count on him on the offensive side. Defensively is where he's lacking a little bit. He's gotten better, but not. He's nowhere near Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid is running for Defensive Player of the Year. We can all agree on that. And he's one of the most impactful players in defense across any teams or across any conferences. But when you talk about an all-NBA team, I have to go with Jokic as well because of what he can do all around. Embiid is not limited, but he's restricted to what he can do. Whereas Jokic can be a passer, can be a rebounder, and can be a shooter if need be. And I think that's where it really comes down is Joel Embiid, as good as he is, he's not in that I would not pick him as my main center right now. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think it depends on what type of team you're building.
That's
like you're
very
building
true.
Your team very differently with each center.
Very true.
I mean, and that plays into just the style of the play.
Yeah. They're both, I think that if you were ranking And Dre, you can get your thing. But like, if you're ranking the top 10, both Jokic and Embiid are top 10 players in the league.
Guaranteed.
Like, the crazy thing is I love Jokic, and I want him to be a first team. But the thing is, I think what Embiid provides on the defensive side is just so, so, so important. Especially when you get to the crucial games. Like, what he did last night on Kyrie Irving was so impressive to me. And that's something that Jokic would have got iced and diced and it just wouldn't make
sense. He would not have been able to clear that.
So, it's tough because I think, personally, when you talk about dominance, I think Embiid will win that dominance argument over Jokic. Like, he can legitimately dominate a game. But at the same time, Jokic just dominating a game is in a different aspect.
Yeah.
Is where he's getting other guys involved, which can't... It's so right up the middle that I'd be okay with either. And because Jokic didn't start on All-Star team, I think you get him first All-NBA.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really fun conversation to have. Yeah. All right, so
you're a really fun conversation to have.
Thank
Greg.
You, I appreciate it. So let's move.
Speaking
let's move
of
to
conversation,
our last segment. We were gonna do a fun one-on-one bracket,
which
thing,
we'll do still,
but we'll move past that.
You're right.
Skip that. We'll just go to our. It's been a while, guys. We haven't had our end of the episode awards in a while. Our usual drawlers and gripes and overreactions. So, Dre, do you have any drawlers this week, this month?
I mean, at this point in time, you just get the same drawlers over and over again. So
I don't know, though.
I mean, it gets you James Harden, I mean, for sure.
Okay.
What about Russell?
Can I get to it? Gosh.
Give us your five. I mean, give us your five.
I don't have five, but James Harden, 30 points against every team, never been done in league history. Just nuts. You think Kobe would have did it or Mike would have did it.
Psych.
Like, you would think.
So is James Harden better than Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant? I'm just kidding.
No.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Not at all. No, we can't have an argument would I rather bring my, build my team around Kobe or Harden, but we can do that on another pod. That actually be interesting. But D'Angelo Russell pouring it up, 44, got to give it to him. And, you know, I want to give a special shout-out to somebody who I think has been a walking bucket all year, all of his career. And if he was a starter, this guy would probably average 25. Lou Williams.
Oh, yeah, duh.
My guy Lou Williams, man.
Always balling.
I love me some Lou. I think he's been great for this last month. He's going to win 6 men of the year. But, yeah. Yeah. Also, finally, in the time and the minutes that he's been given, I think Isaiah Thomas has been extremely efficient with the buck he's been given, but that's neither here nor there.
Honorable mention of draws. Yeah. Greg, what pissed you off this month, this week, this year?
this entire year.
Give it to us. Yeah. So like, give it to us.
I didn't have a big gripe this past month, but I do have one right now. As I'm looking at these Eastern Conference standings, the bottom half, I see the Pistons making this push. They've been 7-3 in the last 10. Good for them. Nets win a game, big game the other night. But I see the Miami Heat and the Orlando Magic and the Charlotte Hornets battling for the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference. And my biggest gripe with that is I don't care for any of these teams.
That's so true.
And this is really just a detriment on the Eastern Conference because no matter who plays the Milwaukee Bucks, we know they're going to get rocked in 4 games. Why can we not see a better Eastern Conference? Why do I have to see the Miami Heat come in year after year as the 8th seed with Kelly Olynyk and no longer Tyler Johnson, thank God, but James Johnson coming in and just getting wiped? And I love Eric Spoelstra, but come on, please, you need to be better. I don't want to see the Orlando Magic. Steve Clifford is a boring head coach. Aaron Gordon is out of position. Jonathan Isaac is a fun player, but like, let's go. And the Charlotte Hornets, Kemba Walker, I love you, but your team is trash. Like, I need to see some fun here. I almost would rather see the Wizards because at least Bradley Beal is going to put up like a solid 37-9 or something like that every night in losses to the Bucks. Like, I need to see something. And I just – the battle for the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference is probably the worst battle that I'm going to see across the sport.
Hey, Louis, before you go, bro, I got two things, man.
That made me happy.
I have one more note. I forgot to think of a large bar a month. I also want to add Trae Young to the Buckets getter list because he was snapping for one point in time. Also, Greg, I would rather see the Hawks and the Bulls play in that AFC game versus the Bucks than those three teams because at least I can see LaVine do some freaky stuff and I can just joke on the Bulls. And I know Trae going to give me some good stuff and John Collins. So
you want to see Vucevic just going hard against Brook Lopez in an incredible matchup?
I'd rather see better guard play, and I think those teams have better – besides – the Hornets have better guard play than Miami and all those other squads. So yeah,
that's fair.
Greg, that was good.
Thank you.
You started slow and then brought that heat.
You know what that reminds me of? The SEC tournament.
March Madness is going on right now.
Yeah, we need to speed it up.
We have a game going on.
My over-weekly reaction while these guys are watching another game because they don't care about what I have to say is that the NBA needs to install and have a Comeback Player of the Year award. It needs to be a thing.
The MIP used to be.
They used to have the Comeback Player of the Year.
They're going with the Most Improved Player now because it's like, well, he was away for a while. Like, but I don't want that. I want a Comeback Player of the Year because you have so many guys in that discussion. Like Paul George would win it this year because of what he's been doing. But Isaiah Thomas could compete for that for next year. And so many players who have gotten injured with like ACLs and whatnot, like LeVert, if he had been doing much better than, you know, anticipated, or Gordon Hayward if he had done better. Like those kind of players, they might explode like anytime soon now. They might come back to their level. And I do think that it's something that needs to be acknowledged because, you know, we have someone like Eric Berry who had the Comeback Player of the Year a while ago when he beat cancer and came back. To me, that was incredible. And that's so powerful. And to show that in the NBA, because we have so many of those stories as well, not as drastic, but so many of those stories that they need to be implemented and they need to be a part of the narrative because everyone else is talking about it. So why isn't the league acknowledging it and giving those players sort of an acknowledgement and a tap on the shoulder to say, you know what, we can't even understand to see what you went through, but we're so happy that you're back at where you are and back where you belong. And that's, to me, is necessary.
Would you have both? Would you have most improved and comeback?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, because you still need to, like, for me, D'Angelo Russell and Siakam deserve to be recognized for what they've been doing this season. You know, obviously only one can take the trophy, but that's a good competition. However, none of them are comeback player of the year. D'Angelo Russell could make a case in some ways, but not really. Like, to me, the comeback player of the year is more like someone like Gordon Hayward, you know, who got shattered, you know, first game of last season, or Paul George shattered during the USA mini game, like kind of injury-related things, or absence, you know, Monty Williams.
What about a Derrick Rose?
Derrick Rose would be a perfect comeback player of the year. I didn't even think of that because I kind of forgot. He would be an incredible comeback of the year. A lot of people would be like, well, he deserves like the most improved. No, because he was already there. He just got bad luck. Mm-hmm. And that would be a comeback player of the year, not an improved player. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the league needs to look back into re-implementing that to see what it does. I think the fans will really enjoy it. And I think if you give the chance to if you give the fans the chance to vote, along with the media, I think it would be really interesting to see who they think is the comeback player of the year.
Awesome.
Let's go watch some basketball today, shall we?
One shiny moment, I reach for the end button because I'm trying to watch basketball. Thank you guys for tuning in Lane Violation Pod. We didn't cross many lines today, but there will be many crossed in the future. Have a wonderful day and enjoy March Madness. Peace.